We're just here in the moment. Not back there, not up there. Up there hasn't happened yet. All of what's back there is here in this moment, right? And then each moment is new. So, thank you everyone for being here. If you can't hear me at some point, if my voice should get soft, please just say speak louder, please, okay? Because sometimes I can drift a bit. Ray, can you hear me?
I can.
Good. I think you know that we're focusing on the teachings of the breath. And the source of the readings, I'll always try to note what source I'm drawing from, because I tend to bring in teachings from different paths, which is very much in the spirit of universal Sufism. We're focusing primarily on teachings on the breath and kind of breath yoga. We might call it Raja Yoga, based on the Vedanta tradition of that sort of come down through that whole lineage of Patanjali and the Patanjali Sutras. It's kind of all moved into this one body of teaching. So if you have any questions, please feel free to ask, and we'll have some sharing along the way. But for a few moments, let's just allow ourselves to settle in. I want people to feel very comfortable during the class, so if you need to move from floor to chair or vice versa, do so. We will have someone joining us maybe in 20 or 30 minutes. She's driving in from Lawrence. We got a phone call from her, so again, there'll be a little shuffling. Leah will have to bark and smell her, and we'll probably all want to see who's coming in. But just let it rise and fall. I'm using here Tibetan medicine bowls. They have the seven different metals in them that correspond to the different energy centers in the body. In Tibet, they're actually used in the healing arts. Just allow yourself to focus on the sound. And watch the mind. The mind shouldn't be reaching out to grasp the sound. The sound comes in to infuse the mind. Become very loose and free. But at the same time be full. And notice the quality of the inhalation and the quality of the exhalation. Are they different? And if they are, how? Giving a good demonstration, a reminder that when you we actually start our breathing practices, it's good to clear the lungs very forcefully. He's really a good teacher, isn't he? But we might start like that. Let's just backtrack for a minute and take a deep breath in. And then breathe out. And as we breathe out, to get a full exhalation, we can even slightly bend forward at the waist and push the extra breath out. And then breathe in. A few sips at the top of the breath to fill the upper lungs even. And then breathe out. And then breathe in. And breathe out. Bending over, pushing the breath all the way out. And then just let the lungs naturally fill. It's a very good idea to do that first thing in the morning to clear the lungs of any toxins that could have built up when we're sedentary during our sleep. It has an immediate effect of sort of waking one up and making one feel revivified, purified. So we take a few moments here at the beginning to invoke the presence. Of enlightened beings. Those beings that have informed our path, inspired us, instructed us, given us love and support along the way. Those may be beings that are on the planet at this time or those that have come before us. So just kind of hold that on the inner concentration of calling to mind. Diane, would you like a pillow, Diane?
Thank you.
Could you sit on this one, second pillow? This one? Second pillow.
Thank you. holding in the concentration, this calling forth, calling for these illuminated beings to come here and be with us, tuning to their vibration, asking them to guide us during this time, opening our hearts and opening our minds, making us feel at ease so that we can feel a kind of equipoise and balance in body, heart, and soul, so that the benefit of whatever is to come from this time together is fully integrated and is of benefit not only to ourselves but to others by creating a vibration that is enlightening and harmonizing. For those that have an attunement to the various archangels, invoking their presence to come and sit at the four corners as our guardians. And we also remember to invoke the presence of Hazarat Pirmurshid Anayat Khan, from whom we will be reading and sharing this body of teachings. And with palms pressed together at one's heart, those of us that know the Sufi invocation of Hazrat Anayat Khan, we will say it together, and those that don't, listen and also just inwardly make your own prayer, your own invocation. Toward the One, the perfection of love, harmony, and beauty, the only being, united with all the illuminated souls, who form the embodiment of the Master, the Spirit of Guidance. So the first reading is from the Gathas. Part 4 on the breath, Gatha 3. teaching number two on inspiration. Inspiration comes from the light thrown upon a certain idea. It comes from the radiance of the breath falling upon the mind. Again, inspiration comes from the light thrown upon a certain idea. It comes from the radiance of the breath falling upon the mind. There are two shadows, one that is projected upon the sky and the other that falls upon the ground. There are two shadows, one that is projected upon the sky and the other which falls upon the ground. The former known to the mystic, the latter to everyone. When the breath which is developed is thrown outward, its radiance produces light. And it is the different shades and grades of this light which manifest in various colors, suggesting to the mystic the different elements which the particular colors denote. The same breath has a different action when it is thrown within. It falls upon the mind like a searchlight and shows to the intelligence the object of its search as things seen in daylight. The same breath has a different action when it is thrown within. It falls upon the mind like a searchlight and shows to the intelligence the object of its search as things seen in daylight. Thus man knows without any effort on the part of the brain all he wishes to know, and expresses in the way each individual is qualified to express. Inspiration, therefore, is one thing, qualification another thing. The inspiration is perfect when expressed by the qualified soul. Nevertheless, inspiration is independent of qualification. When far-reaching, it illuminates the deepest corners of the heart, where the light has never reached. And if breath reaches further, the light is thrown upon the mind of God, the storehouse of all the knowledge there is. Now that's the extent of that teaching. But how many things were brought forth in that one few little phrases? Inspiration comes from the light thrown upon a certain idea. This comes from the radiance of the breath falling upon the mind. When the breath which is developed is thrown outward, its radiance produces light. What do you all think that means?
That we created the world. As with the use of the brain.
Anyone else? Thank you. Hazaretta Nikon goes on to say, when the breath which is developed is thrown outward, its radiance produces light, and it is the different shades and grades of this light which manifest in various colors, suggesting to the mystic the different elements which the particular colors denote. Again, I think this really calls to look more deeply again and again into that those breaths that we do call the elemental breaths. You know, he keeps bringing this up, and he also keeps pointing to the fact that we, by understanding the natural world, we can come to understand that internal world as well. I mean, we're part of nature, and understanding that outer world helps us understand the inner world, and the inner world helps us to not project so much on the outer world so that we can see it with greater clarity. Does that make sense? So you know me, I kind of go around Robin Hood's barn, as you would say. You know, that's what they say that the New York taxi drivers do to you. You know, they take you all around Robin Hood's barn. I've heard these stories of people getting into a taxi and wanting to go to Central Station and being driven all around and then realizing that it was just a few steps away from them. But hopefully the journey was interesting. Mm-hmm. So hopefully this one will be as well. So here I'm reading now some teachings on the elements. This is from the Gitas, and it's on an aspect called mysticism, and it's the relation among the elements. So what I'm doing, just so you know, is I'm sort of building, you know, I'm building the setting for the jewel. The jewel of the practice will come in just a bit. So be patient, please. So again, this is from the Gitas. Mysticism, the relation among the elements. The elements are related mostly to their nearest element. Earth with water, water with fire, fire with air, and air with ether. Water fertilizes the earth and makes it fruitful. And heat protects water in its liquid form and keeps it from solidifying. The tides depend upon the cosmic heat, in other words, the light of the sun, reflected in the moon, controls them. The fire is kindled by the help of air, and it is the vitality of the ether which moves through the air. Although all elements are related to each other, yet earth and water are mated, and so are fire and air elements, either being exclusive. Now, here we go. Here's a little secret. The people of the temperament in which earth dominates will harmonize with those of the water element. So people that have this tendency, that are they're very stable, they're very grounded people in the lighter aspect of that element. But if they have the tendency towards depression or lethargy, plodding along in its shadow element of earth, they'll be attracted to people of the water element. Water element is always progressing. It's always moving. Its natural tendency is to be in motion. So, of course, people that are, like, plodding along are going to be sort of attracted to these people dancing around through their life. You see? It's, everything is really a matter of a clearly and deeply observing nature and noticing the rhythm and the vibrations. And then you start to see how things have attraction and repulsion. And Hosrat and Icon spent a great deal of emphasis, and this is a practice that those that are initiates are at least prescribed to do every day. Whether or not they do, I don't know, but it's a good practice to do daily because it helps you see these things. And he goes on to say, people of the temperament in which fire predominates will be harmonious with those of the air element. So the fire element is an element of inspiration. It can be energetic. It can also be anger, you know, in its shadow side. It needs air. Air element is the element of the mind, of creativity. So, of course, the fire without that will just be suffocated. So there's this synergistic relationship, you might say. People have harmonious and inharmonious times with their friends. This is accounted for by the same reason. When they have the mated elements, mm-hmm. namely earth and water, or fire and air, activity in their breath, they are harmonious. And in the absence of the same, they lack harmony. I mean, haven't you found that true? So for just some reason, you're just not in harmony with someone. And it may be someone that normally you get along quite well with. But something comes up and then you can be feeling frustrated or you could get angry or you want to just not bother with it, right? I mean, doesn't that happen? But if we can look at it from this side of what element am I in? You see, by doing the elemental breaths, we come to understand, am I in the fire element and my friend is in the earth element? And I'm feeling so inspired and they're just like, you know, in the mud? Do you know what I'm saying? Can you understand this from this point of view? It's very practical. I'm really very interested in offering these teachings in a very practical way. It's not, ooh, 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 we're going to sit around and chant, you know, and look funny and act funny. This is like practical stuff that we can use in our everyday life if we just stop to think about it. I mean, we're talking about mysticism, but actually I'm really interested in demystifying mysticism because it's very practical. And the truth is that people that lived very close to nature and understood this, the yogis, I mean, it was just nature for them. Mm-hmm. Then we've isolated ourselves. We're no longer in nature. And then we have to think this is all hoogie-woogie, some mystery that we've lost. It's not lost. We've just lost ourselves. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Here I go. I'm starting on my evangelistic talking. Okay, folks, you hear me? Amen! But do you understand? I mean, I think people can... This is clear, yeah?
Amen.
It's very practical. I like the practicality of it. In fact, each of these elements creates out of itself its child element. It's interesting. He uses the word child-element. And again, in time, absorbs it within itself. The elements shows the Creator's nature, with a capital C, who creates at times and absorbs at other times. So this is really even relative to the breath. expansion and contraction, awake and asleep, eating, processing food. You know, it's just this constant undulation of things. And then he quotes the Quran, and he quotes other holy books, but here he's quoting the Quran. He says, This is thus explained in the Quran. All come from God, and all are bound to return to God. We see that the ether creates air. Here now he's talking about the dissension of elements from the ether. You know, this is now, he's also in a way describing the creation of the whole universe. From this very subtle, still state, there was motion that happened, and there was air. Okay. And then air creates fire. The Big Bang, I keep talking about that a lot, right? So that from out of this kind of very still state, there becomes a subtle motion, that's air. The motion creates colliding of molecules. Boom, you have an explosion. Fire. From fire, and we know this is true, I'm always advising people, please use, what do they call it? Heat or that gas stuff in your additive to your gas tank. The minute it turns warm here, it's going to get cold again. Condensation from the heat, right? The cold, and then you get the condensation from the heat, then it gets cold, then you get ice in your gas tank. People can't figure out why their cars aren't starting. That heat absorbs that water element. So here, I'm just trying to give you some practical knowledge and also to prevent you from getting caught in your, you know, without your car running. So here you go. We see the ether creates air, the air creates fire, fire creates water. Okay, when things are heated, they become liquid. We see that. We can take anything solid. If we heat it, it becomes liquid. Okay. So fire creates water, and water creates earth. Again, when we take an element and it, water, and we let it be absorbed, there's something residual left often. It could be salt if it's from the sea, or it could be... I don't know, what do they call that? Stuff that comes from the faucet if you let it drip, drip, drip.
Minerals?
Minerals, like things become calcified, yeah. So I'll start again and I won't interrupt, but I'll read the whole sentence all the way through. We see that ether creates air. The air creates fire. And fire creates water, and the water creates earth. And yet, in the water, the earth is dissolved. See, now he's going back the other way, up the elemental scale. In the water, the earth is dissolved, and by the fire, the water is consumed. And air puts out the flame, and ether absorbs the air. So he's gone up and down the elemental scale there. It is this mystery that enables the Sufi to master the constructive and destructive powers of the universe with the knowledge of mysticism. Mastery is not only in knowing, but in knowing and doing both. So it's very interesting. You can start to, if you turn to the elements, you can start to see, is it a constructive force? Are things being built, or are things being dismantled or deconstructed, you see? And I can tell you, one of the things, I thought that the moment of the eclipse was very important for us to observe. Not only because, wow, it's cool, but that signifies something that's happening within nature that we also are part of. But, for example, my first teacher, Mershita Vera Korda, she always asked me to report to her on the new moon. And she would say, I'd always have to call her or send her a letter about what I was, my spiritual practice, and what I was understanding through my spiritual practice. And why the new moon? The new moon was because for women, the new moon is the time where it's the most, you're the most inner, and then the light starts to grow. And she always said between the new moon and the full moon, set your intention for that month. Because it's a building time, you see. The light is coming. And she said, at the moment of the full moon, let it go and let it naturally then continue with the phase of the moon. This is part of these elemental understandings. And for men, it was in a way the opposite. She liked for men to report on the full moon and sort of then allow them to, themselves with their intention to go more receptive. Do you see the difference? She was known to be a master of the elements. It's really a shame she's left this earth. But hopefully I can give you some of that that she shared with me. These are very important, subtle things to be aware of in nature and how we can use the rhythms of nature to our benefit. Would anyone like to comment about anything I've said so far or have a question? Yes, Robin.
There's something really special about today, the energy, and it's the alignment with the planets. And we're in the full moon phase, aren't we?
Yes.
So this time is to release for us women, right?
Thank you. Anyone else? Yeah, Megan.
I need a clarification.
Yes.
Probably a basic, but could you describe ether?
Yes. Ether is, we're going to do the breaths and you'll maybe be able to experience it. And I know you've done them with us before. Last time you were here, we also did it. Ether is a very subtle state. And if one was to describe the motion of ether, it is almost stillness. It's a kind of equipoise. And it is said that out of ether, all of the elements come from the ether element, and all of the elements are absorbed. So it's not like ether like we think about, that we use to anesthetize people or whatever. It's a state. It's an elemental state.
Sort of like white contains all the light. I mean, all colors.
In a way, it's that way. Black is said to absorb all the colors. It's like black and white both, because white reflects all the colors. And in that way, ether absorbs all the elements. It has the capacity to contain all the elements, and it has the capacity to release all the elements.
When you think about it, it's like stem cells. They're unformed, they're just matter, really, with that spark of life in them. But they can absorb anything that you give them and become this very intricate, sophisticated structure, organs, limbs, all sorts of things. But until that state happens, they don't form into that. They can just remain.
So
unformed tissue.
So ether's like a potentiality.
It's a potentiality.
You know, all traditions say something like this, beginningless time. Well, I mean, isn't that something that's just like almost inconceivable? But it's like ether's kind of like that, you know? It's, and I really like thinking of it as this, these moments before even the universe started to come into creation. And when you think about that, what was before the before the before the before? You know? And all spiritual traditions try to describe that in some way, you know?
Do you think it's related to Einstein's conception of ether? That there had to be something for light to travel through that you couldn't see, smell, weigh, touch,
Could be.
He's after Hazrat Anayat Khan,
yeah.
So he had to pick up some of these things from.
He was very Buddhist. he was really always trying to describe things in a way. I mean, we do that in our Tibetan Buddhist studies, where we are looking at things. When a Buddhist says things are empty, it doesn't mean they don't exist. It means that they don't exist in the way that we conceive them. And that if you can identify anything that is completely independent of everything else, then we could say that it is self-existent, and yet there is nothing that is like that, and therefore things are empty, because they're contingent upon a conglomeration of interconnected things, and therefore are not inherently existent. Does that make sense? It's a rather complex concept, but when you get a glimpse of it, you think, wow, this is all... is all not what we think it is. And so I wanted to read these few caveats. Yes.
I have a question.
Yes, or comment. Yeah. Hello. Maybe that chair is comfortable. Yes?
Hey, when you were reading the description of the ascension and ascension of the elements, It was reminding me of various sort of approaches to alchemy. But the question that came to mind is, I guess when I've done the element breath, I realize it's sort of been my inherent concept that the idea was to balance them all, to have all the elements in balance. But when there was discussion of how people's interaction might get strange because one was in an element that's sort of contrary to what the other person was into. Does Inayat Khan go into talking about emphasizing certain of the elements?
Yeah, of course.
So it's not simply keeping them all in balance.
The thing is when we're given them as a practice, we're always given them as part of our meditation and prayer session. And in that way, we want to have them in balance because we're trying to create a kind of equipoise. I'm wondering if he could use some cough syrup.
Some upstairs.
If you get it, well, I'll give it to him.
Okay.
Come on, So, we'll do the breaths in a moment, and then you'll know what Moose is addressing here. But the elemental breaths are again given as part of a daily practice, and here we're trying to really sit with the element, experience the element in our body, and feel the vibration of that element, the essence of that element. And then, if we can understand that, of course we're moving up the elemental scale, and we finish in our meditation practice in the etheric element, but of course that's the most expanded, encompassing element. And we want to be in that state when we're meditating, of course, or praying. We want to be the most expansive, the most receptive, right? But if I'm needing to... I think some of this happens naturally, by the way, but if I'm needing to invoke an element, which sometimes I do, you know, those that are closest to me frequently call me the Energizer Bunny. Well, the Energizer Bunny frequently relies on the fire breath to get her butt going. If I'm really tired and I know I still have a few hours of something I need to do, I'm not going to sit and do the ether breath and get all spaced out. I'm going to do the fire breath to get myself charged up, to give myself the energy. But I may do the ether breath in the evening so that I can calm down and relax so that I can sleep. If I'm feeling stuck, like I'm trying to solve a problem, and I know that I'm just going over some repetitive pattern, and that pattern did not work before, you know, it's not working, but I can't get over the hump, I might use the water element to get myself going. And then I might use the air element to inspire myself and get creativity going, you see? So if you understand the elements, they're like medicines. I mean, they have medicinal qualities that you can use and invoke and use as you need them. Does that make sense, Musa?
Yeah.
Yeah, good.
Although it could be a matter of temperament, but it seems to me ultimately that on average, they all need to be in balance, or you'll end up flying off the wheel one direction or another and have a harder time getting back to the center again.
Well, I think that, again, there is we certainly want things to be in balance, but there are times where well, that ties into some things that we that I was going to share, so I'm going to share it now.
Great.
It relates to me. I hope it relates to you.